Good morning. Today is Tuesday, the 29th of November. Joining us this morning, Meek and Mild, City Manager for Fortuna, Merritt Perry. Good morning.
Hey, Meek and Mild, I'll take it.
Now you got the real stuff over there.
Subtle sneak up on you that way.
Yeah. Oh, are you ready for our...
The Book of Pain.
That's right.
There? Yeah.
Okay. Not that you have any connection to this at all.
Okay.
And this is associated with the furniture, not with the live act.
Okay.
Why do we say Chippendale?
I thought it was...
That's probably not a word that's often used in front of you.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Okay.
I thought it was the name of a furniture manufacturer. Who knows? Probably from England or back in the day. But I thought it was name. I don't know.
You
no guess.
You don't have to. You pretty much nailed it.
Nailed it?
All yeah. Right. Chippendale furniture has been a perennial favorite since the 18th century. Thomas Chippendale of London was one of those rare persons capable of putting inherited components together in order to come up with something new and different. He experimented with French furniture from the period of King Louis XV and much older Gothic designs. Not one to ignore beauty, he borrowed from Oriental styles as well. When the British artisan published his Cabinet Maker's Directory in 1754, he offered instructions in more than 150 styles. Always using mahogany, Chippendale built so many kinds of beautifully carved and sturdy pieces that his name came to designate any and all furniture that resembles his style.
Ah, well.
You got it. Has nothing to do with stages.
Dumb luck.
Yeah, or Australian guys.
Yeah.
But I think we both kind of figured that one out all by ourselves, huh?
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, put a smile on your face, though. Oh, boy. Holiday season. Special challenges for you this year at all? Or is it pretty much what was it? Hoped for with the weather being as it's been. I know it's supposed to get a little wet here in a couple of weeks, but is this kind of like overtime or extra innings for you?
Yeah, no, nothing surprising. You know, the only real difference, I guess, for us at the city is we're going to be seating some new council members. And so that's, you know, we've had a pretty long run with the same council members or maybe one changing, and it'll be nice to be welcoming two new council members. And then you start thinking about all those things that you have to do when you have new council members coming on board and, you know, well, who's going to be the mayor or who's going to take what committee assignment and just getting everybody up to speed on the different rules of coming onto council. So, no, it's exciting. It's nice to have change and to be able to, you know, get some new ideas. So that's probably the biggest difference.
Are these your first newbies?
We've had a couple come in while I've been there, but yeah, since 2018, it's been pretty steady. The same council's been there. I think we had one turnover. Tiara Brown was on there for a moment, and then Jeremy Stanfield came on. But besides that, it's been pretty steady. Mike Losey came on at one point. I helped onboard him, but he'd been on the council before. So he
told you how to do it?
Yeah. No, he had plenty of experience and didn't really need a whole lot to get up to speed.
So you're having to dust off all the new old manuals and...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I haven't looked at these for 4 years. You know, what did we do last time we onboarded? But it's interesting to think about what's important. You know, what things can we share about what's happening in the city? You know, really, you know, what things do we really need council input on and kind of roles, responsibilities, rules of order, just basics, which I'm sure that both of our new candidates, Kyle Conley and Chris Mobley, they've been on our Measure E committee, so they've been on city committees
in the past
and attended council meetings. Yeah, so I think they're both sharp folks, so I think they'll get right in with things. But
I would think it's a chance for senior staff to reinvigorate. Also, as you get pumped up about what you're doing and why you're doing.
Yeah, it gives you a chance to kind of say, hey, here's what we're doing. Here's what we think's important. And
and one of those important things is hitting our break on time. It's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Merritt Perry from the city of Fortuna. Last time we got together, it was still kind of a little shock and awe, Merritt, about PG&E and hookups or not hookups and development and not development and what is and what isn't. Has there been any kind of settling out or filtering? Is there better knowledge now of what's going on or what isn't going on?
Yeah.
Where is it?
Yeah, you know, I think really the Board of Supervisors meeting at which, you know, PG&E made a presentation really kind of summed it up. You know, it was kind of a wild ride for a little bit between, I guess, the end of August and November when PG&E said they had no capacity. And then they worked hard to come up with a plan where they could kind of make some stopgap measures. I don't know exactly what those are, but they went from saying, hey, no more commercial connections to we have, capacity for the applications we have, plus, you know, the 60 anticipated projects in the Fortuna Rio Del area. And they found a way to free up capacity and keep those communities going. On top of that, they made a commitment, you know, at least to the, you know, they looked at the county in three ways, you know, the Fortuna Rio Del Ferndale area, then the, and I might get this wrong, it's been a little bit, then I think it was the Alder Point Bridgeville zone, and then there was kind of the Garberville to the west zone. And so they have different circumstances in each area, you know, and I think the northerly area that had the easiest path to getting us back to having the capacity we need, and they committed to invest $16 million there and then at the end of 2 years to be able to be back to business as usual with the ability to serve many of the forecasted connections that are coming in the Fortuna Rio Del area. So
you're feeling a little bit better today than you were 2 months ago at this time?
Yeah, you know, it went from almost in a sense a building moratorium for commercial businesses to okay, we're going to keep moving, they're going to fix this problem, and we're going to be back to business as usual. When you work really hard on trying to attract businesses, or support businesses that want to expand, and something like that happens, that's completely out of your control. You don't have any really clarity into what their operations are. It's something that, you know, it's like an external force you have no control over, right?
Yeah, like a tornado showing up.
Yeah. So, and it was unexpected. You know, you're making this big push, and I think everybody assumes that power's just going to be there. And, you know, I'll have to say I do appreciate PG&E stepping up and recognizing the importance of this and finding some solutions.
Yeah, if they had blown it off,
right,
that really could have been detrimental to the future.
It would have taken us backwards in a huge way. And, you know, you look at keeping our existing businesses there that need to expand or increase operations or having new businesses that want to locate, you know, it reduces the number of jobs, it reduces the sales tax gained in the community, it reduces the number of people doing things in your community. It really could, you know, create a slowdown that, you know, really is, you know, out of the city's control.
It must have been frustrating hearing some of those early arguments, I guess, that were thrown against the wall that were really specious.
Yeah.
I suppose that's probably human nature to kind of just defend instead of going, interesting perspective. Let me do some research and fall back and I'll come back to you.
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what still the exact reason is, or how, you know, what exactly their solution is, you know, to,
or what level is that determined?
Even. Right. You know, so it makes me nervous about their ability to follow through, but what they're saying is really a good thing.
You got to go with what they're saying now.
Yeah, I mean, but it's I think it's very positive for the northerly area, but where some of that, you know, where you have fewer customers in a larger area where they're not going to have those improvements done for some time to the south of the county, it's, you know, they're still in that detrimental phase of, hey, we can't really grow the way we want to. And so, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag how, you know, with the response, but at least there's a little more clarity and, you know, commitment to how things are going to get done, you know, at least in the northerly half, but not quite as much yet in the Garberville area.
So with the projects that you were working towards,
yeah,
back to full speed, or is there still a little hesitation until there's some documentation of and specificity with some of these actions?
I think there's still some concern, and you know, PG&E's been I'm grateful they've participated in some discussions with prospective developers who have projects or are in escrow on properties, and they really want to just hear from the horse's mouth that, hey, this is, we're going to be able to provide service. This is what we anticipate within the next 2 years. We're making these improvements, so there really shouldn't be limitations. So I'm happy with where it's at, and I really just, you know, I hope that PG&E is able to, you know, complete the work necessary to, you know, make the, you know, to fulfill the commitments that they've put out there. So, you know, I'm still concerned, you know, but what they're telling me is very good for the community. And a lot of projects, you know, do have a longer timeline, like new projects starting from ground up. Those a lot of times will take over a year to, you know, get through the planning and design phase.
Do they get the opportunity to fast track any of that stuff through some of the regulatory hurdles in a situation like this where there's things are pent up behind it?
I'm not sure. You know, I don't know what their process is. I know normally their improvements take a long time, and they go through a rate application, and they justify the expense of the new facilities.
So
and
they
it
still
takes
have
a couple
to go through
years,
the PUC.
But yeah. I don't know. It sounds like this is more quickly, like PG&E is going to put the money towards this rather than going through the rate application to find a more expedient solution.
It's 8:30.
I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information. Time is 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Merritt Perry from the city of Fortuna. Lots of projects seem to be going on in the area. You guys have got your fair share of them also. I know that there was hopes for expansion of the mall. We've talked about the mill site, a couple of other projects. Are those now that you're able to apply some focus there rather than in some of these other areas we've been talking about? Are they back on your radar screen?
Yeah, there's certainly some long-term projects that are starting to get to the point where they're looking like they could become more and more of a reality. You know, and these are things that have been talked about in the community for a long time. You know, one of those projects, you know, obviously, you know, the mill site, people are looking at that. We've talked about that on past shows, but the city's still working on a specific plan. We got a Headwaters grant for that. The property's in escrow with a developer who seems to be very interested in working with the city to get things done quickly. So,
now, for folks that are unfamiliar with what escrow is, or escrow with the city or a jurisdiction, is it like buying a house? Is it different? What is the escrow period for this particular challenge?
Well, Town of Scotia owns a property, right, that came from Pacific Lumber. So it was a former Pacific Lumber mill. Town of Scotia owns it. So they're under contract, and they have a period where they can, you know, execute their due diligence to do inspections and determine the condition of the property before they close escrow or any what barriers could be to development. So there's somebody who has made an offer, is my understanding. I don't see these things. It's, you know, between private, two private entities. But my understanding is that they are in escrow on it, and that they
are. So they're poking around and looking.
Yeah, they're kicking the tires and deciding whether they want to buy the car. So, you know, there's certainly a role for the city to play there in helping them to understand the landscape when it comes to permitting projects or planning. And
now, in the past, there had been discussion about traffic.
Yeah.
Associated with that, and you guys formalized traffic, you know, access points into that property, or is that something that is also being determined and discussed during this escrow period?
I think the constraints are well understood at this point by the city, and the improvements that need to happen are fairly well understood. And it really depends on what goes in there and how much traffic it generates. But yeah, that's one of the trickier things for this project, is how do you get, you know, a large number of vehicle trips in and out without causing unacceptable congestion at the interchanges, right? That's one of the big ones for this property.
Well, and when you say unacceptable,
right,
you know, that sounds like a squishy. Yeah, it's not X number of cars per X time frame. It's a perceptual thing.
There's a way you can evaluate the functioning of roadways and intersections. And, you know, you look at the level of service, and you can determine, you know, what the city can determine what's an acceptable level, and they determine that by how long you're sitting there, for example, at an intersection. So there's been analysis on all of the intersections, you know, and certainly there'll have to be probably at the south end one signalized intersection added. But, you know, the more we look at this, the more we understand it. And it's interesting.
And the more the community.
And we're just at the point right now where we have, you know, so the two things that are happening: one, somebody's looking at buying it, and they have an idea of what they want to do with the property. And what the city is doing, which before there was interest in the properties, we're working on a specific plan, which is really, you know, kind of you know, more specific changes to the general plan. You know, it's identifying how that property should be developed in a manner, you know, consistent with the framework of the general plan. Like, what will the land use be? What can the land be used for? You know, what can the density of it be? What is a basic, skeletal structure of the infrastructure?
So focusing on tomorrow rather than utilizing yesterday as a reference.
So it's a little trickier now because we have, you know, a developer with a strong interest and a strong, you know, ideas of what they want to do. And then the city's working on what its vision is. And, you know, we were at the point on the city's development of the specific plan. We're getting ready to roll it out to the public. We met with some interested, I guess, parties who have properties in and around the mill site, and we kind of shared what the city's ideas were. We've shared those with the prospective developer and the Town of Scotia Corporation, the owner. And so we're right at the point where we need to finalize that draft and bring it to the public for public feedback. So it's going to be exciting to hear what the public has to say once they see the ideas that the city's come up with.
Do you do that before the property is sold? Or after? I would think if I was a prospective purchaser developer, I want that out before I commit, because if there's any blowback or major change, you know, that could scuttle the project or take a positive ROI into a negative one.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, right? Like, that's in an ideal world, right? In an ideal world,
yes,
everything
we're theoretical here.
Step one to two to three to four.
Yeah, sequential, right? The whole nine yards, yeah.
So I think that's one of those things where there's kind of a, you know, you have to have a certain level of trust. And it's important for us to be able to work with somebody who's going to make a big investment in a property like that. They want to see returns. The city wants to see it fit in well and not create impacts to the community, but be a positive change to the community. So, you know, that's where it's key, those relationships, developing trust and a working relationship. So I'm very optimistic. You know, I think there's a really good chance that projects that are going to move forward, I think they'll see council and public support. I think the developer will be happy with, you know, what the city's vision is there. So, well, you know, I think everything's converging and going in the right direction. So.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Merritt Perry. Merritt, we spent a little bit of time in the last segment talking about the mill site because that's the big boy.
Yeah,
you know, it may not be the crown jewel, but it's the biggest jewel,
right,
in the city. But there's a number of other projects that you've referenced or we've referenced over the decades about a little here, a little there. Is it all just kind of, is it Camelot? Everything's just kind of coming together nicely at roughly the same time?
Yeah. You know, I think there's a number of other projects. One of the other ones is a police facility. That's finally out to bid. The city's been talking about that for over a decade. Expansion in Newburgh Park, that's another one that was eluding the city for a decade or more, maybe two decades. And, you know, we bought the expansion piece. We're in design for an expansion in Newburgh Park. You know, also the Roaner Community Recreation District, which was formed in 68. It's a special district. The city's been assisting them to get to a point where they can consider doing an assessment for a pool. They've also have it looks like some certainty on a big donor who could pay a substantial portion of the cost of a pool. So some of these projects that have been a long time, certainly longer than I've been at the city, you know, we've been moving towards them, and it really looks like a lot of them have the traction to really kind of manifest themselves in the near future. So
it's got to be challenging when you've got staff that have got projects right in front of them, fires that they have to put out right now, to look at, okay, 15 years, 20 years, you know, some of these project timelines that are elongated.
Yeah.
And just knowing that things are out there to try to take a little nibble, take a little nibble, taking a little nibble in that general direction.
Yeah. No, you have to comply. You have to apply constant pressure and effort on these projects or you never get anywhere. And it's a different thing working on something that is out there 10 years, you know, like the Roaner Rec District, for example, just trying to work with them to, okay, let's do a feasibility study. What would a pool look like? You know, and then the next important question is how much would it cost? You know, how are we going to pay for it? You know, how would it be operated? You know, there's just so many little things in it. You know, each of those studies you do costs money, and oftentimes there's not a lot of money early in the phase, you know,
it'd have to be revisited
right
in 5 years.
Right. And the big thing is being able to take advantage of funding opportunities when they present themselves. So having a kind of a whole, you know, kind of quiver of projects that you want to work on, looking for those funding sources when they, you know, make themselves available, and having your project at a point where you have to understand, you know, what is the project? You need to be able to say what it's going to look like, how much it's going to cost. If you can get the environmental analysis done, then you've got a project that can be shovel ready pretty quickly. Right.
Those are the three big hurdles.
Those are really, yeah. And also, you know, public support, right? You know, fortunately, we have those projects have been identified in the past. They do have public support, or there's an identified need. So
would it even get to a feasibility study if the public wasn't in support of it?
I think staff can identify city needs without a huge amount of public support, but you're counting on the council to identify what those needs are, and the council was elected. So that's where you have your democracy in action, right? The council knows what we're doing. They know where we're investing money, and if they don't think it's a worthwhile endeavor, then they're not going to give you money to go after it.
Do they get to know to that level where staff time and resources are being utilized?
Not on a micro level, but you know, we can't even submit a grant application without a resolution from the council for state or federal funds.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So all of those funding sources.
So all those grants you guys have to go through?
Every single one of them that I can think of.
Do they get buried like in consent and things of that nature?
A lot of times, yeah.
Okay.
What
would be a more exciting meeting than to have to go through every single one and talk about it? And it'd probably go until 3 a.m.
yeah.
anyway.
Well, another one that just came up is, you know, the city owns a library building in Fortuna, and the county operates a library. This library, the city does the building maintenance. And so we worked with the county collaboratively, and we just got a Building Forward library grant, which is going to replace the old single pane windows. It's going to remove some of the accessibility, some of the barriers,
ADA?
Yeah, ADA yeah. improvements. And then we're also going to be able to put solar on there and have some Tesla batteries backups and to be able to reduce our power bills. So, you know, that was a pop-up and we went after it and, you know, we were successful. You know, there's things that pop up all the time. And again, the point that the council looks at it is when we submit an application or we accept a grant. The council has to approve that. And I'm sure that probably arose from city staff at some point in some city getting grants.
Going
and the council
wild card.
Saying, hey, we don't want to do that. So, but once you've got a council resolution supporting the acceptance or submission of a grant, you know, then the council has a chance to say, yeah, this is a good idea. You don't get some so that, wild project that, you know, is outside of bounds of what the community wants.
So that's a city ordinance that does that, or is that a
it's,
state?
It's typically grant guidelines that are in state or federal grants.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they don't want to throw a bunch of
they've
money.
They've been smoked also.
Yeah, right. I think that's where that comes from.
that would make sense.
If there was a question as a staff member for a city, I think I would, if it was a questionable project, I would certainly take it to council, even if those requirements weren't there, because you don't want to start doing things that the public doesn't want or the council doesn't support.
Well, you're just wasting time.
You're wasting
in
time
addition
and
to resources.
Money. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you'd have to do that to council in a formal setting. Is that part of the stuff of closed sessions?
No, it's all open session items.
Oh, okay.
You know, sometimes we'll do planning sessions where we want, you know, we'll check in with the council. And we'll say, here's what are our planning priorities. Here's the things we're working on. And we'll bring a list. A lot of times we'll do it in a workshop.
Okay.
But, you know, if I'm unsure or I want to add something, you know, and put effort into it, those are the times I want the council to
let's double check.
Yeah,
fair enough. Well, it sounds like exciting times.
Yeah, got
probably
some
worth
happening.
Driving down to Fortuna and see what's going on.
Absolutely.
All righty, bud.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you. Hey, Merry Christmas. We got to say Merry Christmas. I'm going to see you till afterwards.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to
How
you
frightening
too.
Is that?
I don't know.
See everybody tomorrow.